Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, host of the Her Podcast. Hey, welcome to our show in episode 465, Wiping Sweat Off Brow. Oh my God, that's a lot of talking, a lot of yapping away, but it's all good. So we're going to share the truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, her weight. Ha! See, gotcha. You know, all of a sudden you wake up like, oh, did you just spill that coffee? Listen up. This is a special show and one that I know will really hit you hard. Hooey, before we begin, just know that this episode is sponsored by Solaray Vitamins, S-O-L-A-R-A-Y Vitamins. These are vitamins, minerals, and herbs rooted in nature. They've got a special gift for women, the new award-winning Her Life Stages products. And they provide support all the way from the menstrual years, including PMS, ouch, through perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause. We got your back. It's an integrative, holistic approach to having a woman's back for her life journey. To learn more about her life stages, how about hopping on over to your local health food store? Because you know they got them and they got those smarty people who can educate you about the products. Or check it out at solaray.com. Use promo code HER20 for 20% off on the products. Oh boy, you'll be glad you did. All right, here's your first reminder to click on the iTunes to rate and review today's show because we just sit around twiddling our thumbs waiting to hear from you. That's what we do. All right, it's time for Her.
Her. The podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind. Her body. Her life. It's all about her.
All right, this is another one of those episodes where I get to hang out with a BFF. And I'm probably just the only excuse you're here, Tim, is that, you know, just to like be there with you. We have Dr. Tim Church back with us. He serves as the chief medical officer at Wonder Health. In addition, Dr. Church is an adjunct professor at Pennington Biomedical Research Center at Louisiana State University. Most of you remember him from all of the publications he's been in, everything from Time Magazine, oh my gosh, U.S. News and World Report, Wall Street Journal, I could go on, but you get the general idea. Also, he's a consultant to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Physical Activity Guidelines Advisory Committee, and really, quite frankly, a national expert in all things physical activity and healthy lifestyle. Did you like that, Tim?
That was really, really nice, Pam.
I could do it again if you like. No, it would make you feel any better.
No. You nailed it, and you already said weight and fun in the same sentence, so this is going to get really weird really fast. No, you said truth. You said weight and truth. There's nothing about those two things that should ever go together.
I know. Seriously, it's like the worst ever. And what everyone should know out there is Dr. Church has both an MD and a PhD, as well as a master's in public health. I think he spent the first 30 years of his life just collecting degrees, all of which, you know, have helped him literally build a basis as one of the nation's experts in this whole topic. So why are we sitting here talking about this? I'll tell you why. Raise my hand. I know. And that is because you and I have been around for decades talking about this stuff. And what I'd like to do is, before we hop into all things 2024, let's look back in time a little bit. What was it like talking about obesity and physical activity 30, 40 years ago? What was going on then, Tim? Because you were doing all kinds of work, Cooper Institute, everything. And really, at the end of the day, you can really speak to these trends. Let's talk about them.
Yeah, scary trends. When you talk about exercise, there was many of us, and I was one of them. Let me just put that out there. Where I was like, all right, you can exercise your way skinny. If you're not losing weight, then clearly you're not exercising as much as you should, or you're not telling us what you say you're not doing what you say you're doing. And that was wrong. We were wrong. Yeah, a lot of the reason we were wrong is the same pathway or same learnings that all these new medications take advantage of. And specifically where we were wrong, and it makes sense if you think about it, your body will defend its weight at any cost. Any cost. You know, with exercise, where it got challenging or got confusing is about 10% of people can absolutely control their weight with exercise. Maybe 10%. I should say control. I should lose a lot of weight because that's a difference. About 10% of people can lose a lot of weight with exercise. About 10% of people are going to gain weight with exercise.
I remember running my first marathon, you know, and someone told me, oh, dude, you know, when you're running these half marathons, you know, practicing for the marathons, you're just going to be cooking calories, you know, like 5 pounds later. And I'm like, wait a minute, what happened here? I'm killing myself out there. And it turns out, you cannot outrun your fork.
No. And especially back in the day when we all believed when you're training, you can't eat enough carb. You just can't refuel enough. And it was good for training. It just wasn't good for your weight. You know, but and everybody is in between. Like you got the other 80%, and they're going to lose a few pounds with exercise. Generally, you're going to lose, I don't know, 4 or 5 pounds if it's exercise alone. You really have to impact eating to produce weight loss. And I can't believe I'm saying this. I was on the Today Show with Katie Couric 25 years ago, arguing that exercise was the answer to everything. We've learned a lot. And a lot of that it comes around these things that didn't even exist when we went to med school. You know, the gut hormones, which is also really weird to say.
You know, I mean, you didn't even say any of the ohms, like microbiome and the the ohms were not even in existence.
We had like insulin and glucagon, and that's where it ended.
And we were happy.
And we thought they were the answer to everything. But now you've got, you know, GLP, and you got amylin, and you got all kinds of, they're gut hormones. One of the things people don't appreciate about the guts, the intestines, whatever you want to call them, is they have a lot of nerves. There is more nerve cells in your intestines than in your entire spinal cord. I've jokingly heard the intestines described as smarter than the brain. So why am I talking about all this? Because these things produce these chemicals, these hormones, they're called incretins, they're called gut hormones, they're called energy sensing hormones now. And they tell your brain what to do. They tell your brain to eat. They tell your brain not to eat. And that's really started the launch of all these new weight loss medications. At the end of the day, most of them are copies or ripoffs or replicas of gut hormones that tell your brain not to eat. That's it.
Well, it's interesting. You know, we thought we had hit pay dirt a while back when we discovered ghrelin and leptin. Remember those days? We thought, okay, we can, you know, do this leptin stuff. That was Rockefeller University. Ghrelin is the hunger hormone. And when that little hummer is stimulated, watch out, because honey, you're going to eat everything that's not tacked down. And leptin was more of the satiety hormone. And, you know, if you had some kind of magical balance between the two, it's all good. God bless. You know, but if you had rotten sleep, then ghrelin was screaming in the morning and you went over to Starbucks and bought them out. And then, you know, it's like an out-of-body experience. What happened? I just ate 5,000 calories worth of pastries. So we thought that was kind of cool. Now, that turned out to be a boon when it came to bariatric surgery. Now, remember, bariatric surgery became a thing. Suddenly, everyone was doing, you know, the big surgeries and then the smaller surgeries, and things started getting more concise and precise. However, that being said, we also know that so many people had those surgeries and gained the weight right back.
Yeah, and particularly with lap band.
Yeah, oh yeah, my God. Well, lap bands were useless.
They were, but you know, again, all things go back to gut hormones. Because if you do the bypass, the bariatric bypass, if you do the gastric sleeve, they actually really impact gut hormones. So it's not necessarily the physical constriction of those surgeries as much as it is impacting the gut hormones.
When you do the sleeve in the stomach, you actually cut out the area that secretes the ghrelin. So bye-bye with the hunger hormones. And that, I think, made it a lot more effective. I've seen people who've done fairly well with the sleeve. The lap band was utterly useless. And the bypass, well, don't get me started. So it was a tough one. So we had all these things going on over the last 40 years. It's like unbelievable. Meanwhile, While all that was going on, and we as medical and professionals and scientists were trying to stay on top of all the newly emerging information and back and forth, all hell was breaking out with nutrition. We had the carb days, the fat-free days. Oh my God, those days. And so fat-free meant you were basically consuming a mountain of processed sugar. Hey, no wonder everyone got fatter with all of that. And they scratched their heads saying, but I thought, and that was also when fat was vilified. And it turned out it wasn't fat at all. I mean, obviously, high quality fat's cool.
I'm not convinced. Stick with me. We want to make these things so simple. We want to find the smoking gun. And there was a time where fat was the number one predictor of everything. It was a number one predictor of weight gain. It was a number one predictor of keeping weight off. But that was back in the day when people moved a lot more and there wasn't a massive supply of carbs in the food chain. It had to be fat because there was nothing else. So I don't think that we were off so much as if we were wrong. I think we were right for the environment. I think the environment has changed, which made carbs way more important than fat. Because there was a time when you did these analysis of successful weight losers, and it was always how much fat did you cut out of your diet? Because that was the primary source of extra calories. You didn't have the carbs and the sugars like you have now. Now it's shifted. Now it's like, wow, we got this Mount Everest of extra calories in the forms of carbs and sugar. And fat doesn't play the role it used to play. So I think it's a little bit more than us just being wrong. I think the environment changed too. And people will argue with me about that. And they don't like it when I say that because don't ever, you know, don't go against conventional wisdom. But I think there's some to that.
No, I think you and I have been going against conventional wisdom since we were born. So why stop now? You know, it's just weird when you look at the what they've been calling the obesogenic environment within which we live. What in heaven's name happened? Well, now we have a whole push on ultra-processed foods, and it's not just carb. I mean, you've got crappy luncheon meats that are God knows how much, you know, they've been processed the hell out of, and it goes on and on. So it's the fat, salt, sugar thing that keeps rearing its head, only to find out that the grand majority of people who are not swinging with the program here are actually consuming upwards of 70% of their calories easily in terms of ultra-processed and processed foods in the worst way. And then they wonder why they are pre-diabetic or diabetic, because suddenly you've got a huge surge. I remember, do you remember the days, we're doing this whole memory lane thing, people out there on the Her Podcast lane, listen to us because you never get an opportunity to listen to two crazy people like us. So it's just interesting that over the course of time, we've been looking at food so differently, so almost demonizing it in many respects, and filling people with fear about everything they eat. And the thought that you would eliminate an entire food category and call that a good idea, you know, like I'm completely fat-free. It's right up there with I'm completely carb-free. Well, carbs include vegetables and fruit. So, you know, I don't want to break anyone's heart out there. And fat is virgin olive oil, you know, excellent dairy and all the rest of it. And then honestly, flashing forward, Tim, you wonder why people are confused.
There's a whole nother side of it. And you're going to giggle when I say this, but you know, you got these medical celebrities and the quickest way to medical celebrity is to pick a food and attack it. And this has been going on as long as I've been in the game, but it's been really amplified by social media. And it's like you said, it just doesn't make sense. If it was that simple, none of us would have jobs. There's so many things at play here. It's not just processed foods or carbs. It's just sheer excess in this country. I can go to Home Depot and buy 2x4s and lunch. I mean, that's just bizarre. I can go to Hallmark card store and buy a couple cards and lunch. Everywhere we go, we're just surrounded by food, processed, organic, or whatever. It's just calories everywhere. And we are designed to respond to calories.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, bring it on. There is no question. You're actually right. The way I look at it is if we're people who are trying to really maintain some level of control over what we eat and also physical activity as well, how do you do that when there's garbage food on every block and you're constantly tempted? And no matter where you go, this stuff is just keeps showing up no matter what you do. I look at it like a battlefield. And I feel like a warrior and a soldier just kind of like getting my way through there with a bayonet. You know, it's like, stay away from me. You know,
you know, it's wild. You really see it when you travel. When you go to other countries and you're not surrounded by food at all times, you really see it. And your eating is kind of restricted to meals. And it's how we grew up. I remember you ate at a meal and then you didn't eat again until the next meal. There was no snacking. Not really. Not like now. And, you know, when you go to other countries, some countries, you see that. And when you, it's kind of nice. It's kind of nice not to be surrounded by food 24/7.
I know. And it is, but it's affecting other countries. I just saw an article in the Wall Street Journal that was playing up on the new drugs, which we'll talk about in a second.
At some point.
Right. Yeah, I know. Seriously, you know, whole waxing philosophical. And it said, what's really interesting is that we in the United States are not the most obese country in the world. Okay, here it comes. Drum roll. It's China.
China, yeah.
Because China has a monster population. I mean, come on, we're talking billion here, billions. So just by virtue of the fact that they've got so many people, right? 200 million people currently are obese in China. Now, how did China allow that? I thought, you know, you got thrown into a fat camp or something at some point. What's going on over there anyway? They haven't reined it in at all. Whereas I think you have other countries like India, which I think that just somatically they're smaller people in general. I thought Chinese were too, but, and Asians are in big trouble when they become obese because they tend to deposit more of the fat deep inside the belly, which is the worst place to have excess fat because it's highly associated with cardiovascular and metabolic disease. Whereas other countries just end up with a big butt or big hips and thighs.
And it's why, we could do a whole hour on this one. It's why BMI is worthless at a population level. It really is. BMI is meant for white men. Let's put it out there. And you really get in trouble when you get Asian populations because they can have an absolutely normal BMI. They can have a BMI of 23 or 24, but they're carrying the weight in the abdomen and they're at really high risk for type 2 diabetes. I have to explain this to companies all the time. They're like, oh, we're going to use the BMI cut points. I said, if you have anybody who is outside of a Caucasian male, you're discriminating against them. You really see it on the two coasts. But yeah, it's an interesting phenomenon. You know, when it comes to weight, you know, it's not necessarily what you weigh, it's where you weigh. And weight in the belly isn't particularly bad.
No question about it. And my Lord, the grand majority of people, I hope, have gotten that message through the countless articles that have been floating around the internet and other places as well. So let's flash forward. And
Wait. This ties to medications. Why weight in the belly is so bad is because it directly impacts your liver. Directly. Belly fat, it's like punching your liver, whereas fat in other places in the body can actually be protective. You know, as we talk about these medications, one of the things we're going to talk about is the future of medications. And one of the amazing thing about the future of medications, the ones that are in the pipeline, is they annihilate belly fat and they annihilate liver fat. So they're producing good weight loss, but you cannot believe what's happening to LDL cholesterol. You cannot believe what's happening to triglycerides. You cannot believe what's happening to blood sugar, HDL. We have some pretty good medications right now. The stuff in the pipeline is, it has the potential to change everything we know about prevention, which nobody's talking about. Everybody's talking about the price right now and the Kardashians. Nobody's talking about, when you really look at these, the next round of agents, we're on what I think everybody keeps calling them. This is the third generation of weight loss agents. The fourth generation of weight loss agents is going to be, I wouldn't even call them weight loss agents. They're like metabolic health agents.
Yeah, these are metabolic medications. This is a whole different ballgame at a much higher level. I mean, what we're seeing right now is so beta. It's just so primal, you know, and that includes Ozempic, you know, which is kind of like...
Ozempic is semaglutide for those out there. That's the official chemical name. That's what Ozempic is, and that's what Wegovy is. They're GLP-1, so the same damn molecule. They just gave it a different jersey to charge more.
Yep. You know, it was interesting, the original medications, which appeared over the last 2 years-ish, were supposed to be for type 2 diabetes, and you needed to have the diagnosis to be able to access the medication. And then came the problem with insurance coverage, which was iffy. And then came the problem with access per se, because every celebrity in Hollywood then wanted to pay cash for the stuff and was just eating it up like it was going out of style. And so tell us about the drugs.
Yeah, so you're talking about the GLP-1s receptor agonists. You know, GLP-1, again, it's released from different spots within your intestines. What's so wild about them is think above and beyond weight loss. A, they bind everywhere in your brain. They don't bind just one place. So they're good for your blood vessels. They're good for your heart. They're good for your brain. Oh, by the way, they control blood sugar. That's why most of these medications came to market as diabetes medications. The original ones produced some weight loss, but it wasn't a lot of weight loss, and it came with a lot of side effects. So over time, as they dialed it in, really the first one I would call dialed in was semaglutide / Ozempic / Wegovy. You got the weight loss with a reasonable side effect profile, mainly nausea. But now you look at tirzepatide, and tirzepatide's a GLP-1 plus a GIP. It's combination medication. You've got big time weight loss with a much better side effect profile. That tirzepatide is Mounjaro for diabetes, and it's Zepbound for weight loss, the weirdest name ever. But the weight loss is incredible. Incredible. You'll see 27% weight loss out there. That was actually one of their clinical trials. But if you really dive into that data, if you say, all right, let's throw out the people who would never have been kept on this medication, the non-responders, which is a whole nother weird thing, why some people don't respond to things. But if you throw out the non-responders and you relook at the data, 35, 40, 45% weight loss. So you now have a medication which outperforms bariatric surgery. It's pretty wild. And I keep challenging people. I'm like, you know, if the cost wasn't north of $1,000 a month, let's say the cost was $200 or $300 a month, this would be such a different conversation right now. One of the things I kind of keep saying, and people just kind of roll their eyes when I say it, we could eliminate type 2 diabetes right now if we wanted to. And that's an exaggeration, but we could eliminate new cases, and we could put, I don't know, 50% of current cases in remission. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about price, but that's neither here nor there.
Well, you know, first of all, I want to make sure everyone out there in the Her Podcast land knows what GLP-1 stands for. That's glucagon-like peptide. And the thing that we're dealing with right now is our multiple layers as we're wrapping our head around what these drugs are. Number one, no, you're not cheating. Okay, a lot of people kind of wag their finger like, you know, especially when Oprah shows up and she has a brand new silhouette and she's clearly dropped a goodly amount of weight. And she basically said, she didn't say which one she's on, that she is taking the medication. You know, I think people are trying to take the stigma out of this. Now, let's take a step back. is obesity a disease? And the answer is yes.
Do you feel weird saying that?
I feel a little strange because it's been years during which we've been talking about nutrition, physical activity. But you know something? When you now realize that over 40% of the adult population in the United States is obese. And by the way, the majority of people in the United States, majority, it could be 51%, doesn't matter, have been overweight since the late 1990s. So this has been going on for a while. We've been sort of like working our way up there. I will tell you the COVID lockdown did not help. And now it's predicted that by 2030, the majority of USA adults will be obese. Now, again, it could be 51%, whatever, because we're in the mid to high 40s right now, and we're in 2024. And if we keep trending this way, then there's no question about it. So given that, and once somebody has gained the minimum of 50 pounds to qualify as obese, I'm not talking about like you gain 5 or even 10, and we're talking 50 here, that's tough stuff to drop. Let's just call it what it is and not be namby-pamby here. It is work, and you're working in an obesogenic environment. I'm just doing a reality blast. There's no excuses here whatsoever. I'm saying it's tough. It's tough to do that. So then you have all the metabolic issues that go along with it, right? And so now is viewed as a disease worthy of medication, which should be paid for by insurance, no different than high blood pressure. Because, you know, if high blood pressure is out of control, then you've got strokes and you've got heart attacks and you've got all kinds of little problems. And so there's a spill off. So if you have obesity that's out of control, you have the metabolic problems, which also include hypertension and the rest of it. So I think everyone out there should know, we as physicians and scientists are now wrapping our heads around the fact that obesity is a disease and that we're starting to move toward more of the disease model here, which includes medication. Now, that being said, if you are sitting in front of me with high blood pressure, you get the same damn lecture about taking care of yourself and being responsible about physical activity and eating appropriately. Popping a few pills is meaningless unless you live within your own ecosystem of healthy lifestyle. So that is absolutely fundamental to getting anywhere in terms of positive benefits with any of this. So does that make sense to you, Tim?
You nailed it. I think I'll call it a fact. It's a fact that it's a disease. I think to me, the real thing that changed my mind was the New England Journal paper a couple decades ago, Australian group. They had people lose weight through behavioral means, and then they watched them over a year. And it was really the first time someone measured these gut hormones. And what they found was those gut hormones, those incretins that suppressed hunger, those went away. And the gut hormones that promoted hunger over time, they went up. So in a way, we know this. We know the body doesn't like to lose weight and keep it off. We had never been able to prove a mechanism. Again, we end up back at the gut hormones, back at the incretins. And I think that to me was really like, man, this is way more than just calories in, calories out, willpower, suck it up, buttercup stuff. The other thing too is, I think it's fair to say this, I've exercised more people in clinical trials than probably anybody on the face of the earth. And when they exercise in our trials, they come to our treadmills. We know every calorie they burn for 6 months or 9 months or however long they're with us. We got to know them really, really well, these people. So we knew how hard they were working. And some of them, we would exercise like 225 minutes a week. And watching them either not lose weight or barely lose weight over the course of the 6 or the 9 months over and over and over again. Like a light bulb went off in my head and just went, man, this something's going on here we can't explain. The body's defending this weight. And people are like, oh, well, they added muscle. Well, guess what? We had DEXAs. We had their muscle. We had their fat mass. We had everything. We knew, you know, from having done that over and over again, I've really come to respect how hard it is to lose weight and keep it off. But you hit on another really important thing. That's lifestyle. And with these weight loss medications, what's getting lost in all this mix, and of course, Tom Wadden did the studies because, you know, every good study's ever been done, Tom did. But he showed definitively the importance of lifestyle in these medications. These medications are going to get the weight off you, period. But they're not going to make your life right, per se. You might not necessarily sleep better. Your stress might not be any better. Your coping mechanisms around whatever's going on in your life that used to be food might switch to something else. There's some weird, I don't want to say irony, or important factoid here is when it comes to these medications, you have to be doing a world-class behavioral program or you're not going to get the outcomes you want. You're not going to keep it off over the long run. And more importantly, you're just not going to be the best you. It is not a miracle pill. You still have to do the behavioral work and build the skills and the behavioral learning to really get all you can get out of this.
Well, there's one other, I'm going to layer on one other complexity here. And that was something that was unexpected. And that is when you're dropping the weight, utilizing the current medications, because we got new ones in the pipeline. If you're obese, you're heavier, that means that you actually have more muscle on your body to be able to lift your body out of a chair. You know, it's basically you are your own power lifter. So just getting out of a car and, you know, whatever, you're hoisting an extra 50 pounds. And if you think that that's not very much, grab 2 25-pound bags of dog food and just walk around with that all day. Classically, if you were to just sort of like use, you know, diet and exercise to drop weight, 25% of the weight that is dropped is muscle, because that makes sense. You don't need the same level of muscle mass anymore because you no longer have the 50 pounds. So the muscle situation is very different. However, oh, here comes the however part. Oh, so they found out with shock and horror, some of these drugs, these injections, actually caused a greater loss of muscle mass, upwards of 40% or more. Like rot-row. Now, let's think about this for a second. What? First of all, you've lost your engine. You went from an 8-liter to a 4-liter, so good luck with that. And two, if you regained the weight, let's just say you started at 200 pounds, you made it to 150, and then for whatever reason you stopped the med, but you dropped 40% of your muscle mass, then when you regain to 200, you're actually, as it were, fatter. You have a higher body fat percentage because you're missing the muscle mass. And so now you're in a worse situation. So from what I remember, Lilly Pharmaceutical just bought a company, if I remember correctly, and that company has some fancy schmancy new compound that is able to affect the muscle fibers and the ability to decrease this lean body mass loss. Did you see that?
Yeah, there's so much to unpack here. I don't even know where to begin. We've did so many of these studies. You're all about this. I'm preaching to the choir. It's not just about muscle mass. It's about how healthy that muscle is. And that's why I say when you are using these medications, you also have to be physically active. You also have to lift those weights. Not just for the hope that you'll reduce how much muscle you lose, but more importantly, the muscle you have is healthier. It's not just going to get healthy from you losing weight. You have to put in some work, stimulate that muscle. The good news is it's not like the crazy recommendations we used to have around weight loss. Now it's like, hey, get out there and walk 100 minutes a week for me and go into the gym twice a week and lift some weights for me. And when I talk about a strong behavioral program, that's a key element. The key element is exercise with a real emphasis on resistance training.
Oh, there's no question about it. What I usually do is whenever I'm talking to someone who is seeking some advice about this, I say, I want you to sit down and write down no less than 10 different kinds of scenarios where you're going to screw this up incredibly badly. Now, since you're American, you've been on at least 500 different dietary regimens because it's un-American not to. So you already know how you screwed this up in the past. Now I want you to tell me what those scenarios are and how you are going to work with it this time so that there's no, oh my gosh, I went to an anniversary party. I ate everything that wasn't tacked. Okay, you've been there before. So how are you now? So this is where that behavioral therapy comes in, because the past is good for one thing, learning. What happened? It was either, you know, you learned a hell of a lot. You didn't learn much. It was like, you know, kind of a vanilla experience. When you did learn, you learn eye-popping stuff like, wow, I didn't realize I was capable of fill in the blank. The behavioral piece is a monster here. Physical activity, you know, the work done by Kevin Hall at the, you know, National Institutes of Health in Digestive Disease, that institute. So he was the one who analyzed the Biggest Losers. One of the things he did in the original piece he wrote was he said, oh man, this is a mess. So he looked at him like 6 years out or, you know, something like that. And he found out that a goodly number gained it all back and then some. So this is not good news, needless to say. Rapid weight loss obviously doesn't help either and all the rest of it. But he then published another piece, which was a clarification and further enhancement of this. And this is what it said. What it said was the people who did keep the weight off and rock and roll were the ones who absolutely continued to lift weights and to fill in the gaps, that energy expenditure gap, the gaps with physical activity. These people just keep moving. But lifting weights was critical to maintaining the muscle mass. And if anything, sort of gradually, I'm using this term so carefully, resetting a little bit of their foundation for what is kind of normal, always knowing that given the fact that they were at one time over 100 pounds, over the, you know, they're way obese, that there's this little whisper in their ear that is always there saying, screw up and you're going to gain it all back in about 5 seconds. So they're vigilant, they're physically active, and they actually eat a bit less than they ever anticipated eating. You know, so it's that weird thing where they had to set a new normal for themselves. And this was a revelation on the part of Kevin, you know, when he did this, because he was trying to understand what was going on in these people's bodies.
So I call them the Oprahites. The people who could lose 100 pounds and keep it off, and guess what? You're famous. And there's not many of them. You can do it, but you're doing it at an incredible cost. You're working out an hour and a half, 2 hours a day. Huge numbers, aerobically and resistance training-wise. So it was doable, but the calories you needed to expend to create, I call them like this safety.
Right. Buffer.
Buffer. Great. Perfect. To keep you in the green zone is extreme. You know, and I think that's why we don't see a whole lot of people lose a lot of weight and keep it off over the long run.
At that level. Yeah, there's no question about it. So, you know, I think that when we're looking at all this right now for the wonderful Her podcast audience out there, what we're saying is that this entire field of science, as we're looking at weight management, and what I love to be able to say more than weight is body composition management. I don't really care what the weight thing is. I mean, obviously it's a metric, it's there, you know, but I'm all about body composition. I want to know how much fat you're carrying. I want to know where it's located. So that's to your point about the where part. So if you've got way too much visceral fat, and by the way, you know, all of those body composition scales that have a little app and everything with it and back and forth, they actually have a little measurement for visceral fat, which is kind of cool. And so that's something you got to watch real carefully. You want to know what the lean body mass looks like, and that's a fancy word for muscle. No question about that. And you want to be able to manage that and monitor it over time. You know, the really cool thing about this is that the numbers are much more gentle than looking at some big monster number for your weight. So that's kind of interesting because you could look at percentages and pounds and, you know, these apps and scales have all kinds of ways of presenting this, but pay attention to your body composition. That is so terribly important. And then whip a tape measure around your belly button and just look at what happens over time. For men, it's easy. It's called a beltometer. Okay, so you know where that damn notch is, you know, the one that's like about 20 feet long now because you've just stretched the hell out of it. Okay, so men have that. Women, we have a jeansometer. By the way, just throw out your elastic stuff, please. One of my patients once told me when I asked her, I said, so what's your size now? And she thought about it for a minute. She was like, elastic. You know, and that's all she said. She hadn't had a metric in God knows how long. There's no number there. I'm like, wait a minute. Okay, throw them out. Let's start getting into some stuff that's going to make you feel your body. So as we're looking at this whole issue, here we are decades later, because you and I have known each other for a long time. All right, here we are flashing forward now. From all the years where we thought, you know, it was calories in, calories out, and exercise will solve all your problems and all the rest of it. Well, as it turns out, nutrition is the monster. There's no question. And exercise puts a period at the end of the sentence. So exercise seals the deal, but nutrition's what really does it. So if that's true, what are you eating? Well, suddenly we have issues here. Because here's the other thing that I find fascinating, and I'm just going to throw it out there. It's a whole different show. And that is, when you've put on an extra 50 pounds or more, you are now different. It's a new normal for you. And so when you want to reverse that, you're taking it from a place where you're different, and now you're going to go to another place where you're different, because now you're someone who shed 50 pounds. So you started out obese, and that was your new normal, and now you've shed the weight, now you've got a new normal again, and the only thing that solidifies it and helps you sustain it is by having a very strong program around you and support system and foundation to be able to, you know, make any of this work. You could shoot yourself up with those, all the drugs you want to. Not going to mean anything if you're not exercising and if you're not paying attention to what you're eating. And by the way, you know, so many people on those drugs are under eating and not getting their multivites and all the rest of it. But that's another conversation. Anyway, we're just cleaning this up now. We're just trying to wrap our heads around where we are today, which is sort of amazing. So I'm going to ask you, as we're doing the big closer here, where will we be 5 years from now?
You know, that's funny. I spent a lot of time thinking about this. I'll tell you where I hope we're not. I hope we're not like statins, where it's like, just prescribe it and go on your way. I hope that doesn't happen with the weight loss medications. At some point, somebody's got to step in and do something about price. This is ridiculous. I'm all about companies making a profit. I'm all about companies making a big profit. This borders on criminal, what's going on right now. I mean, this is something that costs them $20 to make. And the pharmaceutical companies aren't even to blame. It's actually all the middlemen, because the pharmaceutical companies are only getting like $200 for this stuff. That other $800 is disappearing into the ether. So when we talk about moving forward, we know we're going to have more powerful drugs. I hope, as a society, as a culture, as a people, we accept that when you take these drugs, you have to combine them with a behavioral program. And I hope at some point we bring the prices down so we can help all the millions and millions and millions of people that need the help. Because again, we can change the face of this nation right now if we wanted to. You could almost make MSK issues, low back pain, and other things go away. You can make diabetes go away. You can make hypertension a thing of the past. I've jokingly said, if I was a statin company right now or a blood pressure medication company, I'd be shaking in my boots. I mean, that's the power of what we have potentially in front of us if we do this semi-right, but who knows?
I absolutely applaud that. I'm right there with you. We have got to do this as a package deal. It's got to do that, and we have to develop the support systems around that. And clearly, the financial accessibility to this. I mean, $1,000 a month. I mean, come on, guys, boys and girls. I mean, that,
and we know it costs like $20 or less to make.
Exactly.
Heck, NIH paid for all the research anyway.
So there it is. Well, I hope every one of you out there in the Herb podcast land enjoyed our little banter here about all things women, weight, and those drugs, and literally taking a walk with us down memory lane as both Tim and I look at the genesis of where we have come from with obesity research, obesity science, and now how we perceive it as a disease worthy of appropriate medication to be able to help our entire country. And that includes the military, boys and girls, way too out of shape and all the rest of it. We need help. And the good news is, I think that as we watch the different versions and growth in this field of the medications, this will help tremendously and also, quite frankly, amp up our knowledge base about what's going on in the gut, the brain, and also our metabolism in general, because it forces the issue. We have to understand these pathways to understand what's going on with these drugs. No question. What do you think?
You know, and that's funny. It's such a great last point. It's weird about these drugs. They've now given us a tool to research weight in a way we never could have done it before. Another thing that's being missed by everybody. I mean, I was thinking about this stuff related to exercise. And again, you've got these studies that are already out there. You have no compensatory eating when you take these medications and you exercise. Boy, what an awesome research tool. And I know that's really geeky. But yeah, there's a lot of opportunity here to really understand the mechanisms behind the drivers of why we eat now that we have these medications as research tools.
This is just so incredible. Listen, I have had so much fun talking to you, Tim, for the last hour. It's just been a wonderful show. I just want to say on behalf of the whole Her podcast audience, thank you so much for coming in and sharing your wit and your wisdom.
Oh, Pam, you're so welcome. You know, anytime, you and your people, I'm always ready to go. So anytime.
All right, everybody hop on over to iTunes and rate and review the show because we want to know what you think. And here's another big shout out to Solaray Vitamins and the Her Life Stages products. Run on over to your local health food store, learn all about Her Life Stages, and go on to Solaray.com, learn there. And if you want to purchase there, use the promo code HER20. For 20% off. Look, this has been another amazing Herb podcast. I'm Dr. Pam Peek, your host, and I want to thank each and every one of you for listening in and being such an important part of our Herb podcast community. Just pop on over to drpeek.com to learn more about my work. Join me every single week for another Herb podcast where you're going to hear from extraordinary, entertaining, and engaging thought leaders like Dr. Timothy Church as we share our own wit and wisdom for you to enjoy. Hey, thanks so much. And remember that your time in this world may be limited, but the things you can do with that time are not. So get on out there and seize the day. Have a great one.